we have been reflecting on heavenly things and earthly things, and I'd like to continue that. Well, the liturgy itself wants us to continue, because what else would the Easter season provide for us but deeper insight into heavenly things, into eternal life? Although, let me say as an aside, the more we recognize or understand heavenly things, the better we also understand earthly things, because we get them in right perspective. Now, I said yesterday that in the second week of Easter, we focus on John chapter 3 and the sacrament of baptism, and that in the third week, we read John chapter 6 and we focus on the sacrament of the Eucharist. I was speaking in very general terms. As you can tell, we've started John chapter 6 today. So we're still in the second week, but we're already starting the sixth chapter. We're not going through John's gospel step by step. We're taking the pieces that are appropriate for the Easter season. We didn't read the whole of John chapter 3, and John chapter 3 is rather short anyway. It's only 36 verses. John chapter 6 is twice as long, and we read almost every verse of that chapter in today, tomorrow, and then in the six weekdays next week. Now, we know that it's going to focus on the bread of life. I'm going to not go into that today, because we'll go into that more next week, the more Eucharistic dimension of this chapter. For now, let's reflect on this miracle of the multiplication of the loaves. We know of this miracle, it's recounted in all of the Gospels. Jesus uses this miracle as a starting point, as a kind of attention getter. Because, as I said, he wants to teach us about heavenly things. But he starts with providing earthly bread. I mean, the bread that they ate was barley loaves. It was not the Eucharist. It was bread. But it was an indication, a forerunner of the heavenly bread. So he has to get our attention, as he has to get the attention of the apostles and the crowd. There's a pretty clear parallel here to what happened with the Israelites in the desert. Remember, they left Egypt and they were in the desert. They ran out of food and they complained about that. And God provided manna for them. Heavenly food, heavenly bread. It was not the Eucharist, but it was a forerunner, a figure of the Eucharist, the manna. Now, part of what God was doing in the desert, remember, was not simply satisfying their hunger. He was training them to depend on him, to learn how to be a people of faith, an obedient people. So it was a training period, 40 years. Or you could say God was training the Israelites to be aware of heavenly things, not only to be concerned about earthly things like food and water. It's not an easy training to undergo for us either, for the Israelites or for us or for the apostles. We're just so stuck in our earthly perceptions that we're slow to get it, that God provides for us, he takes care of us, that he's even with us. So here he is doing something similar. God is doing something similar in the multiplication of the loaves. This can help us understand why Jesus asks Philip this question. Where can we buy enough food for them to eat? Now, there's 5,000 men there, it says, and maybe more women and children, but at least there's 5,000. That's a lot of bread. Jesus asks Philip, where can we buy enough food for them to eat? And then the evangelist adds, he said this to test him, because he himself knew what he was going to do. This is worth pondering a bit. God knows what he's going to do. God always knows what he's going to do. He doesn't ask us so that he gets information from us. In fact, most of what God does, he does without our knowing it at all. He doesn't tell us, and we never find out until we get to the next life. Most of what God does is completely hidden from us. So why didn't he just do it? Why does he tell us at all? Why does he bring it up in order to test us, in order to draw us up to higher things, in order to free us from our fixation on earthly things? In the case of Philip, you could see different dimensions of the test. One is does Philip have faith? It's a test of faith. Or it could also be a test of love. Does he have compassion for these thousands of people who have no food? Philip is a poor man, like all the apostles, so naturally he doesn't have anything to offer. It's better to be poor in this sense. The poor are quicker to recognize their need for God, their helplessness. If Philip had been a rich man, he might have said, well, I've got so much gold and silver, and let's go buy some bread for the people. Which would have been perhaps the right thing to do, but it would still have been earthly. It would not have been a faith response. Anyway, he says, well, 200 days' wages worth of food would not be enough for each of them to have a little. He doesn't make any movement toward faith. He doesn't seem to have much compassion. The one thing that he acknowledges is that he doesn't have enough. So that's at least a starting point. If you know the 12-step self-help programs, they start with powerlessness. We came to see that we're powerless. That is an important step, to realize we can't do it ourselves. We can't solve the problems of world hunger. We can't end the pandemic. We can't even provide everything we need for our own loved ones. We can't. That's a good thing to admit. It's not yet faith, but it's at least a good starting point. A better response would have been a two-step response. We are powerless to do anything about it, but God is not powerless. God can do what we can't do. To admit that I don't know the answer, but Lord, you do know. You see, it's a step that Philip doesn't take. Andrew gets a little bit closer because he says, well, here's something. But even he falters before he says this is enough for God to do what he wants. This idea of being tested is very common. In fact, it's universal. God tests all of us. And his reason for testing us is not to find out something he doesn't know, because he already knows what he's going to do before he ever asks us or tests us. It's for our good, so that we will be drawn to higher things. We'll recognize our helplessness and recognize God's goodness and power. So we have to be tested, or we won't grow. That's why I say it's harder for rich people, because they don't feel tested. They can provide for themselves. So we have to be tested, and we all are tested. You see this in the lives of the saints. I'm thinking in particular of Saint Bernadette, my good friend Bernadette Soubirous, the one who saw Our Lady at Lourdes. Today's her feast day. She's not on the calendar, but today's her death anniversary. So St. Bernadette, now people look at her and they say, well, she saw the Blessed Virgin Mary. What more do you want? Well, she saw the Blessed Virgin Mary. She got personal instructions from her. 18 times she saw the Blessed Virgin Mary. What about the rest of her life? What about all the other days of her life? She was tested. She didn't see the Blessed Virgin Mary. She didn't see miracles. She didn't see anything. She was very limited, uneducated, simple, sickly. She, too, was tested, and people pestering her with questions and not believing her and tormenting her about the impact of her visions. So she was tested. And she responded by trusting in God, believing and walking in faith. If you want an even better example, what about St. Joseph? So this is the year of St. Joseph. Joseph, he was guided by angels in his dreams. Remember one time he is asleep in Bethlehem and the angel says, get up and take the child and his mother and go to Egypt. So he wakes up, he no longer sees the angel. He sees no sign that there's anything supernatural going on, and he journeys in faith. He doesn't see angels guiding him to Egypt or taking care of the Holy Family. It's his job. He has to do it trusting that God will provide. It's something like the test to Philip. And this is what God does to everybody. He gives us enough to go on. He gives us something, a light, an insight, a word, an encouragement. And then, and Philip had plenty of encouragement, he was living with Jesus. But then he says, okay, now walk with this. Don't just live this insight or this light on an earthly plane. Live by faith, not by sight. And that's the challenge. That's the difficult part. When we don't see anymore, when it's dark, when we're suffering, when our loved ones are suffering, when the whole world is suffering, people are hungry, well, then we say, well, where is God? What happened? God is not taking care of us. Yes, he is. You just don't see him with your eyes. You have to see him with faith. You have to trust him. That what little we do have, if we trust God, what little we do have, if we dedicate it to what is good, if we are moved with compassion, if we're just, if we're faithful, well then, God takes care of the rest. We don't have to solve all the world's problems. We can't do it anyway. St. Bernadette, she wasn't her job to convince people that the Blessed Virgin Mary came and appeared, or that she was the Immaculate Conception. Her only job was to tell people what she was told. And that's all she did. Wasn't going to take a burden on herself, but that takes a lot of faith to just do your part and not anyone else's. Joseph, of course, he had to take care of the Holy Family. But he didn't have to solve all the world's problems. That's God's business. Philip did not have to provide food for the crowd. Jesus is the one who did it. But Philip had his little part to play. And this is where we are. To trust that what little we have, we can entrust to God. We don't have to see how it works. Live by faith. it's an Easter message, it's an Easter test, it's a challenge. And as we go through this, John chapter 6, we'll be given more and more guidance in how to live by faith and how God himself provides for us the bread of life.